Time now for the Border News with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall edits the Timberjay, a weekly newspaper serving communities in Lake Vermilion and Boundary Waters country. Marshall, welcome back.
Well, happy to be here, Scott.
Twin Metals, the large multinational mining company, released its kind of long-awaited plan to mine for copper, nickel, and other precious metals near Ely. And you've had a little bit of time to look over the plan. Tell us what you've learned so far.
Well, this plan that they've submitted to the Department of Natural Resources and also to the Bureau of Land Management, it's very specific for essentially to start an environmental review process. It doesn't have some information, I think, that a lot of people would be interested in. It doesn't really address, you know, financial issues. One of the things I've been interested in is seeing, you know, whether or not this is a financially viable mine with the current metal prices. So essentially what they've released is an outline of exactly what they're proposing. It would be a 20,000 ton per day underground mining operation. This would be right along the shore of Birch Lake and also the South Kowishewe River. This would operate for about 25 years based on their current estimates. And they say that over the course of that 25 years, they would produce about 180 million tons of ore and produce an average of 174,000 tons of copper concentrate and 84,000 tons of nickel concentrate, and then far smaller quantities of some other metals, including platinum, palladium, things like that. The mine itself would extend about 3.5 miles in length, although you wouldn't necessarily see it from the surface. It would be underground. It would extend from Birch Lake underneath Highway 1 south of Ely, and it would actually go within about 2 miles of the Boundary Waters canoe area. There'll be a processing plant right next to it. It would be right at the entrance to the mine where they would process the ore that comes out of there. About half of the tailings or waste rock that is produced through the mining operations, they say, would be backfilled into the mine. But about half of it also would have to be stored above ground in a tailings facility that would be quite large, about 1.5 miles across in every direction. So that's going to be more of a permanent, my understanding, a waste repository. They call that dry stack, which would be different than the type of tailings processing that we see typically on taconite operations here. That's where the tailings are stored as a wet slurry. At least that's how they're distributed into the tailings basin. And they tend to have more water content in them. The dry stack tends to be drier. The thinking there is that it might be better in terms of lower risk of collapse and things like that. So that's basically the outline as far as the process going forward. The DNR did have a press conference here yesterday, which I did take part in, and they indicated that it's going to be a long process. As we saw with PolyMet, obviously it took that took more than a decade. They figure the scoping process for the environmental impact statement could take 1.5 to 2 years to complete, and then the study itself could take easily 5 years. So this is going to be a long time, and then of course you'd have a permitting process at the same time. And then there's other issues that are coming up. Obviously this one is facing a lot more opposition politically in Minnesota than the PolyMet project, primarily because of its proximity to the Boundary Waters. So, this is going to be a big controversy in Minnesota. Just recently, we had reported that, the DNR had announced that they would be conducting their own environmental impact statement for this project rather than doing a joint one with federal government, which is what they did with PolyMet. But I think there's right now kind of a level of distrust here in Minnesota about whether the Trump administration would be able to do a fair and open environmental review process. So I think that's why the state opted to do their own. So my guess is, the state is going to take a considerable amount of time and look at this very closely, which is what the DNR is saying right now. And the fact that it is located in the Kowishewe watershed, and of course the Kowishewe River is a major watershed that flows right into the Boundary Waters.
So it doesn't sound like there's anything really new we hadn't anticipated in this plan. We've talked about the underground process and You've also reported on the dry stacking process to try and minimize runoff. I found an interesting angle to it was also that former DNR Commissioner Tom Landwehr, after he left as commissioner, joined in this whole public discussion of the appropriateness of twin metals. What's his role?
Well, he actually is the, it's my understanding, he's the new executive director for the Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters. And this was a group that was formed to fight this twin metals project. So, so he is taking a very lead role in opposing the twin metals project. And, of course, it's funny because, you know, he was DNR commissioner at the same time that his agency approved the PolyMet project. So he clearly sees a distinction between these two. You know, the PolyMet, it's not in the same watershed. It's not in the Rainy River watershed, so the water doesn't flow north up into the Boundary Waters. It flows south into the, you know, the St. Louis River and eventually into Lake Superior. There's a sense that the sensitivity of the proximity of this to the Boundary Waters makes it a much bigger concern in terms of impacts to water quality and whatnot. So I think that's why the former commissioner has taken this lead role to oppose this one.
All right. Well, let's turn to another issue that could get bigger and bigger in Lake Country in northern Minnesota, and that has to do with a lot of property owners, even lakeshore cabin owners, when they're not using their property, they're beginning to rent it out, and it's become a cottage industry, pardon the pun. But there's some concerns about how to regulate it, and some people, I suppose, in the hospitality industry want it more rigorously regulated. What's your take on that?
So you're right that this has become an increasingly big issue. More and more property owners, on particularly lake cabin owners, you know, as they're dealing with the taxes and things like that, and you know, and in many cases, a lot of these properties maybe were inherited, you know, passed down through generations of family, and you know, maybe they're not using these cabins as much as they used to, and those taxes can start to really bite. And many people have turned to these short-term rentals, which now can be listed on, you know, these websites like VRBO or, you know, or Airbnb and all that. So it makes it relatively easy for people to rent out their cabins, and there's quite high demand for it. It's a way to generate some income. And, you know, for some people, they may be rented out two or three times a year as a way to help pay the property taxes. In those cases, there probably aren't that many impacts to neighbors. But other people are renting their properties out all the time as a source of revenue. And, you know, if you're a neighbor and the person who's renting out their property isn't necessarily being that discriminating about the types of people that they're renting to, there can be some bad outcomes. I mean, there's plenty of horror stories of people, you know, who are just very, very upset at the noise and, you know, all the activity that can happen when people do come up for a week or a long weekend to rent one of these places. So there's certainly legitimate interests on both sides, and it's one of those things that a lot of counties in northern Minnesota now are starting to deal with, and we're reporting on just the efforts by St. Louis County to try to, you know, thread this needle and figure out a solution that addresses the concerns of people who are concerned about these short-term rentals, as well as people who are benefiting from them. And so they've come up with some policies that their Board of Adjustment just approved, and those changes now will go to the St. Louis County Board here probably in January, and we'll see what happens to these proposals there. But I think they'll probably be supportive of the new rules for this. And, you know, there's a number of things that will likely cause some heartburn for people who are currently renting out their properties. For one thing, it would likely cost or force people to have surveys done so they can mark out the property lines for people. That's if they don't currently have a survey. There's also a minimum buffer of 300 feet between short-term rentals, which means that if, let's say, your neighbor has a short-term rental and, you know, their property line's adjacent to you, you're not going to be able to rent out your property. And in many cases, you know, a lot of these lakeshore lots aren't very big. In many cases, they're 100 feet or maybe 200 feet. So it could actually affect neighbors that aren't even adjacent, but could even be two or three lots down. You know, one of the concerns here is that's going to create friction between neighbors. Essentially, the first person who starts doing it would be sort of grandfathered in, and other neighbors around them wouldn't be able to. That's going to be an issue. It'll also require these property owners to obtain permits from the county for this type of activity, and there'll be a number of hoops they'll have to jump through in order to get that. The other thing that's come up, too, just recently that we've also reported on is that there may be some tax implications as well for these properties if they're being used for these types of commercial uses, such as rentals. They may get taxed at a higher rate, sort of forcing these people to rent them out more, essentially, to help cover that higher tax burden. So definitely some complications that are starting to arise over this issue. And, of course, you know, if you're a resort owner or a hotel or motel owner up in this area, you probably aren't too upset to see the county cracking down on this, because the increasing popularity of these short-term rentals is certainly drawing visits away in many cases from, you know, resorts or hotels up here that might otherwise be attracting guests.
Okay. Well, finally, let's do what turned out to be a heartwarming story. Actually, it started out as a disappointing Grinch-type Christmas story with having to do with the nursing home party in Ely.
Yes. Well, this was at the Boundary Waters Care Center. It's a nursing home in Ely. They had a family Christmas luncheon here just recently, and as they do typically, they had put out a donation jar for folks to donate for craft supplies and bingo prizes for residents at the nursing home. They typically raise a few hundred dollars from that, and they thought they had about $300 in the jar, and by the time the luncheon was over, however, the money had disappeared. So it was definitely, like you said, kind of a Grinch stealing Christmas sort of a thing. You know, obviously people initially were very upset, but they posted this information about what happened out on Facebook, and it was amazing the response in the community of Ely. As a result of that, they've brought in donations. I heard was over $2,500. So the $300 or so that Grinch took certainly didn't spoil Christmas for the Boundary Waters Care Center, because they were able to recoup that and many times more. So definitely it shows the generosity, I think, of the communities. And that's so typical of communities up in this area, I believe.
Sure, yeah. Well, you and Jody and all the crew there at the Timber Jay, we hope you have a wonderful holiday season and Merry Christmas. And thanks for talking with us today.
You bet. Thank you, Scott.
Marshall Helmberger, he edits the Timber Jay, a weekly newspaper serving communities in northern St. Louis County. We visit with him on Friday mornings on the Border News Roundup.